KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Too many people buzzing around like flies. Too many people making money with lies. Too many people with tears in their eyes as we're taking it all away. Too many people just out to survive. Too many people with no heart in their lives. Too many people lost in their pride. So many standing still.
Racing Against the Time. That's Finn O'Loughlin. You're listening to it here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Good evening to y'all. Good morning or good day, whoever you might be, wherever you may be. Welcome to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. My name is Mike Hagan. It's good to be with y'all, and looking forward to the program tonight. Actually, really excited about the show tonight. But first, a quick thank you typically to Corey for New Wave Radio Theater. Tonight, I guess I'll have to say thank you to me. I was sitting in for Corey. Road's sort of nasty out there, and icy and slippery, and a good night for Corey to stay in and listen to Radio Theater. And I did it for her because I was coming in here anyway. So anyway, the final episode, I got to bring it to you myself, Moon Over Morocco. Thank you very much for bringing that whole series to us, Corey. And it was a fun one to listen to. So anyway, the final episode tonight, Moon Over Morocco. Corey will be back with you next week, as she is every Monday at 10 p.m., just an hour before this program. Before that, Kelvin and Jason, they do it up. Jazz plus blues equals 13 days. That's from 7 o'clock until 10. And, of course, at 6 p.m., Tech Radio. The guys keep us up on the outrageous world of high technology. Jeff Wheeler starts things off with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m. every Monday. Good music, good talk, good news. An icy Monday night. New moon, less than 24 hours ago, a perfect night to snuggle up with Radio Orbit, 10th of December, and you're listening to it here, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, your imagination station. Glad to be here with y'all and a part of it, okay? All right, thanks to everyone who joined in last week. Thanks to Paco Algren for a fun show. He's got a good book that he's written. It's called Discipline. So thank you to Paco. Had a great time. And thanks to the band and the members from Anchando, providing the great tunes for last week's program. Anchando, really cool mix of Latin, reggae, rock and roll, hip-hop, and a little jazz and funk in there, I guess. But coming out of Omaha, Nebraska, great music. So thanks to the band for the music for the program last week, okay? All right, by the way, all of the musicians, I should say, are featured on the program, can be found on the website right over there in the music archives at Mike Hagan, M-I-K-E-H-A-G-A-N, and just click over on the music archives, all right? And if you missed last week's program, or any other for that matter, you can always hear them ex post facto. They're all on the web. Same website in the program archives. So if you have a chance, go on over there. Take a look around in there. I've got a nickel that says you'll find something that interests you. And if you do, share it with someone else and see what they have to think if you get the notion, right? All right, tonight, at the midnight hour, backed by popular demand, Richard Allen Miller. Richard has been on the program a couple times, both over the last, maybe 9 months, certainly over the last year. And we have plenty more to talk about, though, with Richard. So tonight, we'll do it. I'm not sure. You know, with a guy like Richard, you can talk about a whole lot of different stuff, but that's also sort of an impediment, because you want to try to stay on topic and talk about, try to stay, coherent with the conversation. And sometimes that's hard when you have somebody like Richard Allen Miller, because you can talk about so many different things, and you get off on this tangent and that tangent. But at any rate, tonight we decided that we're going to try, at least, to talk about psychic phenomena and consciousness and the relation between the two. I imagine we'll stretch that a little bit, at least to include talk about shamanic technique and modern concepts in physics. But anyway, Richard Allen Miller coming up in just a little bit, all right? Going to be an experience, as it always is with Richard, okay? We'll do space weather. Interesting stuff, actually, of course, in the skies above our heads. I'll talk to you a little bit about that in a little while here. And got a few things in the news before Richard joins us. We'll hear the music tonight of Finn O'Loughlin. And he's amazing, this guy. He's a singer-songwriter from Irish Ireland. We started off the show, actually, with a song called Racing Against the Time. Fantastic song, and as I said, his name is Finn O'Loughlin. You can find information about him on the website there, right on the front page at MikeHagan.com. But I think that I actually was introduced to him initially through MySpace or something like that. But then his manager or agent sent me a note over email, and finally I'm so bad about listening to things or looking at things when I get them, because I do get a lot of stuff, and I it's sort of just like it goes in order of the order received. And so anyway, it took me a while to get to Finn O'Loughlin's music, but I'm sure glad that I did, and I'm sure glad that I can share some of it with you tonight. He is amazing, and I think I'll start now with that. Again, another piece of music here from Finn O'Loughlin, and then we'll come back and see what else we can stir up tonight. So let's do that, okay? A song. This is Finn O'Loughlin, and I'm Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This one is called The Grass. Now, I take it back. This one is called Green of the Grass. All right? It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Back in just a few minutes.
Question me for answers, I've got none today. I don't mind tomorrow I may. Don't answer me with questions while I pass the time of day. You're the one who's sure to find a way. All the green of the grass, on the blue of the sky, it's enough to stop me asking why. All the green of the grass, on the blue of the sky, it's enough to satisfy me till I die. Don't spend your time in worry while you change your life around. Did you try to smile before you frown? And I see you looking at me, and I think you know by now I'm the one without a sacred cow. All the green of the grass, on the blue of the sky, it's enough to stop me asking why. On the green of the grass, on the blue of the sky, it's enough to satisfy me till I die. It's enough. to satisfy me till I die.
Nice song there from Finn O'Loughlin. That one's called Green of the Grass. You can find information on the web at finnoloughlin.com. That's finnoloughlin.com. Or probably a simpler method would be just go to my website at mikehagan.com and just scroll down on the front page there. There's a link right over there to Finn's website and also his MySpace show. MySpace page, but he's very talented and lovely voice, great guitar player, and lots of other instruments. Actually, he's got some great mandolin playing actually on this particular disc. And anyway, we'll hear more from Finn throughout the program tonight. Okay, all right. Hello, everyone listening to us this evening on KOPN 89.5 FM on the traditional airwaves or over the internet. Live or otherwise, every Monday we broadcast the program here from the wonderful studios at KOPN, lovely downtown Columbia, Missouri, and we stream the show as well on the internet. KOPN.org is the place to do that. Just click on the Listen Live button, and you can hear this program and any of the other programs on KOPN anytime, anywhere on the planet, as long as you have a decent internet connection, okay? All right, speaking of the internet, thank you to Larry, the web wizard, Larry Norringer, always helping out and keeping things up to snuff on the website. Big thank you. I love you, Larry. Thank you so much for everything you do. And everybody else out there sends art, poetry, music, including Finn O'Loughlin. Would never have heard this stuff had he not had Finn have not heard of Orbit and then sent me his music. So anyway, great stuff. And if you are an artist of any variety, get in touch with me and find a way to share your art with me, and then I'll try to find a way to share it with other people, okay? All right, the website is Mike Hagan, MikeHagan.com. Take a look over there, and you'll have access to everything that I'm doing. Share your thoughts, and it's very easy. There's a forum. It's always up and interesting and busy, lots of outrageous and interesting topics being discussed over there all the time. It's a live chat room, again, available all the time, but certainly active on Monday nights during the program, like right now. Hello to everybody, by the way, over there in the chat. And Chaos, as always, thanks for taking care of that for us every Monday night. We'll peek in there for questions and comments. And I encourage everyone to go over there and join. The interaction that the internet provides for us now is really really remarkable, and it's something that, you know, we sort of have to take advantage of, you know, to whatever degree we decide to. But during the program, I certainly encourage guests, listeners, whoever, to join us in the chat room, and when the program's not on the air, to go over to the forum and get involved in some of the conversations that are happening over there. It's really quite fun and lot to learn, for sure. So, for all of us, no doubt. All right, my email address is orbitradio, O-R-B-I-T-R-A-D-I-O, orbitradio@AOL.com. I love getting email from people who listen to the program. So do my guests, so do the musicians that appear on the program. So do it. Send us notes and comments, questions, whatever, and we'd be glad to respond back. The website, one more time, www.MikeHagan.com. The phone number here in the studio is area code 573-874-5676 or 1-800-895-5676. If we take calls later in the program with Dr. Miller, that number will be 573-443-8255, okay? All right, a couple things about the upcoming weeks. Tonight, as I mentioned, Richard Allen Miller, backed by demand, certainly. Lots of people love to hear Richard, and me too. So it's going to be a fun program tonight with Richard Allen Miller. If you want to get a leg up, go over to the website, richardallenmiller.com. And once again, you can link over there from my site, okay? All right, next week. Right now, it's open, and I'll probably just do the program by myself unless I can get Brooke Medicine Eagle to do the show. I've left a couple messages, and I'm trying to get in touch with her. And the timing is such that I'd really like to have her on the program next week. If I can't get Brooke it's not if I can't get her to do it. If I don't get in touch with her and our schedules, you know, don't work out. So I would just love to have her on the show, and I will in the future, hopefully, if she'd agreed to that. But I'd really love to have her next week, and I'm trying to work that out. If not, I'll probably just do the program by myself, and there's plenty to talk about, and we'll do that on the 17th of December. The following week is the 24th. That's Christmas Eve, and Stephen Herod Buhner will be with us live, actually. Stephen's been on the program a couple of times in the past, maybe three, actually, but this time live, and I'm really pleased to have Stephen, perfect timing again, on New Year's Eve, the 24th of December, Stephen Herod Buhner. And if you're not familiar with his work, oh my gosh, you know, go to the archives and download one of the shows that he and I have done in the past, or we did a show together with Dennis McKenna, Stephen and Dennis, which is probably the most downloaded program of any that I've ever done, and with good reason. Just you know, a real special program, I thought personally. So at any rate, Stephen Herod Buhner on the 24th of December. Then on New Year's Eve, Paul Laffoley. I can't tell you how excited I am to have Paul back on the program. He's the greatest. And we'll do that on New Year's Eve. Paul Laffoley back at the program to start off 2008. And I can't imagine a better way to do it. Okay? Jonathan Zapp the week after that. And, you know, I'm not willing to look any further, okay? All right, lots more in the wing, I'm sure, and we'll just see how the whole thing unfolds in the next months and into the year 2008, okay? All right, let me have a sip here. My voice is a little bit ragged still. But my cold is a lot better than it was last week. I'm actually feeling really good and excited about the end of the year here. I always get excited when the solstices are approaching, the summer and the winter, and the equinoxes as well, and the cross quarter dates. I sort of get excited, you know, often. But a lot of that has to do with the you know, astronomical and astrological events. And this year is certainly a special one, and I'm excited about what's happening in the skies and in the stars over the next few weeks, and I don't know, just sort of feeling good about the whole thing. So, let's continue here, and before we play some more music from Finn O'Loughlin, I'll tell you about one of my friends, Nina Graboy. Nina Graboy, her birthday was December 8th, 1918. And she was a Viennese woman born in Austria back in 1918 and had a very, you know, difficult experience with the whole Nazi regime. Spent months in a detention camp in North Africa. And has an amazing escape story, actually. Got out of there in 1941 and was a refugee in Long Island during the war, World War II. And but at the age of about 36 years old, she probably would have been considered to be living the American dream. She had made an amazing transformation and recovery from her earlier life, but she wasn't fulfilled, and she had this great void, and she went on to do some amazing work, and she studied the esoteric works that I'm really interested in, and so many of us. She discovered the psychedelic experience in the company of Alan Watts, and wrote a number of amazing books, including one that was called One Foot into the Future, which sort of introduced me to her, and you know, I hope to introduce her to some of you. Nina Graboy, one of my favorite people. And here's to her. Something she said that stuck with me was about drugs. And she was very interested in language, and she understood the power of words. And she said, "I don't like the word drugs at all. It's a complete misnomer. When it refers to the psychedelics, for example, they have nothing to do with drugs as culture sees it. They make you lethargic, dull, sleepy. But the psychedelics wake you up. They wake you up in startling ways that can give you very disorienting experiences." And she understood the difference between good drugs and bad drugs, frankly. And that's what it's all about. Everything's a drug. And your business, you know, as a thinking monkey, is to figure out which ones are good for you as an individual and which ones aren't. You know, you stay away from the ones that are nasty for you as an individual and the ones that help you and make you a better person, you know, as an individual. You know, those are the ones you sort of gravitate towards. And it's an individual thing, and a person such as Nina Graboy understood that very clearly. All right, here's to you, my sister, Nina. Born, once again, on December 8th, 1918. Happy birthday. She died, actually, on the 13th of December in 1999. So I should probably say, you know, here's to you again for that. You know, we all come and we go. Speaking of that, Jim Morrison, same day, December 8th, 1943, singer, songwriter, poet, James Douglas Morrison, right? The singer and lyricist of The Doors. He was also the author of several poetry books, and just, again, one of my heroes when it comes to the rock and roll scene. He was a guy I always thought was like a real rock and roll star, you know? If you were going to be a rock and roll star in my book, you sort of had to die. You know? And, you know, that's what he did. He pushed it so hard that he actually, you know, finished himself. But, again, Jim Morrison, the music lives on, and what a tremendous soul and spirit that was inhabiting that body for 29 years or whatever, right? According to Mr. Morrison, the most important event of his life came in 1947 during a trip to New Mexico with his family. And he described the event as follows, right? Check this out. "The first time I discovered death, me and my mother and father and my grandmother and grandfather, we were driving through the desert at dawn. A truckload of Indians had either hit another car or something. There were Indians scattered all over the highway, bleeding to death. I was just a kid, so I had to stay in the car while my father and grandfather went to check it out. I didn't see nothing. All I saw was funny red paint and people lying all around, but I knew something was happening because I could dig the vibrations of the people all around me, and all of a sudden I realized that they didn't know what was happening any more than I did. That was the first time I tasted fear. And I do think at that moment, the souls of those dead Indians, maybe one or two of them, were just running around, freaking out, and just landed in my soul. And I was like a sponge, ready to sit there and absorb it. Jim Morrison, my brother, here's to you. December 8th, 1943, happy birthday. One more. John Lennon, same day, died. 1980, December 8th, John Ono Lennon, born John Winston Lennon, of course, the brilliant English songwriter, musician, artist, social activist, and, someone, of course, who gained fame as one of the Beatles. Lennon, Paul McCartney, critically acclaimed and commercially acclaimed as well, successful for writing an amazing array of songs and touching the hearts and souls of a whole bunch of people. Don't have to say much about John Lennon, all right? So here's to him. John Lennon, Jim Morrison, Nina Grabois, all connected in some way. And interestingly, Finn O'Loughlin, whose music we're listening to tonight, has certainly some vibe of both of these guys in his music. And I'm going to continue, I think, with a song from Finn O'Loughlin. And keep in mind Mr. Morrison, Mr. John Lennon, as we listen to this song. This is called Ode to FZ, Part 1. It's Mike Hagen. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll have Richard Allen Miller at the midnight hour. And right now, Finn O'Loughlin.
Themes are always the same: animals, hunters, and... What is this strange creature with the bulbous head? Who are the figures at his feet, helmeted in the fashion of today's divers or astronauts? No eyes, no nose, no mouth. Only peepholes round little apertures.
Finn O'Loughlin. That's Ode to FZ Part 1. We'll hear Part 2 in just a minute here. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Let's do a quick space weather. And then I'll play another song. We'll get Richard Allen Miller on the line with us and come back and talk with him at the top of the hour. All right? Okay, space weather. Asteroid flyby, 3,200 Phaethon, is flying past the Earth today. Distance of about 11 million miles. This is a big asteroid. It's significant because it is the parent of the annual Geminid meteor shower, which is due to peak later this week, actually on Friday, the 14th of December. So if you have a big backyard telescope, you can probably get a good look at Phaethon as it's flying by. And certainly this weekend, Friday and Saturday, in the late night hours, early morning hours, you'll probably get a good, well, opportunity at least to see some lights in the sky from the Geminid meteor shower that should be peaking this weekend. All right. Now, speaking of things in the sky, for months now, since the 24th of October, we've been talking about Comet 17P Holmes. And now when I say comet, I mean I put it in quotations or something, because I don't know what it is, and I've yet to come across any person or agency out there that has given a reasonable explanation to describe what's happened to this particular object. But you can see it for yourself. Comet, quote unquote, 17P Holmes is an amazing binocular event right now. If you have a pair of decent field glasses or binoculars, you'll see this monster. It's over a degree wide in the sky, out there among the stars of the constellation Perseus, and it's actually overwhelming to me. To the unaided eye, still a naked eye event, but it looks more like a little puff of cloud or something like that. At any rate, Comet P17 Holmes is continuing to astound astronomers around the world. And like I say, I've yet to hear an explanation of anything convincing, because it's certainly not acting like any comet that obeys the laws and the rules that the typical models are supposed to obey. Interesting regardless, all right? So now there are two other comets that are out there in our neck of the woods that are both going to be naked eye in the next couple weeks, supposedly. So lots happening up there, not to mention this amazing alignment and conjunction that's happening between the solstice and the time between the 21st and the 24th of the month. So anyway, a real good time to be looking up in the sky and paying attention to what's happening up there. Okay, all right. What else? December 11th. The 145th birthday of Annie Cannon. Her name was Jump It. Annie Jump Cannon. She was a wonderful astronomer. And actually is of note for a couple of reasons. But she did a whole lot, actually, to help define and determine the spectral classifications of stars and the differences between some of the stars that were being observed through some of the telescopes that were around in the mid-19th century. She was born in 1863, and, you know, so she was using equipment that was, you know, current in that time, and died in 1941. So what they were doing back then is a lot different than what's happening now. But she was very instrumental in the way that we classify stars now. And anyway, she's a great, cool lady. Her name is Annie Jump Cannon. And she came up with this phrase that's actually still used today. It's a mnemonic device that's used to learn the spectral classifications of stars. And it goes like this. It says, "Oh, be a fine girl, kiss me." And this is a phrase, believe it or not, that is still used today, that was developed by this amazing woman, Annie Jump Cannon. So, all right, what else? In space weather, well, I said we have the Geminids coming up. You have asteroid Garrig getting close here tomorrow, but that's not that close. Venus and Saturn at 60 degrees apart right now. Saturn and Mars further than that. The really interesting events with the planets are going to be happening in the next couple weeks. I think closing in on the solstice and then through Christmas. But at any rate, check it out on the web, www.spaceweather.com. And my friend Ken Stedman's website is always a wonderful place to go looking for this information. You know, now I should add that right before the program tonight, I got an email from Kent, and he sent me a link and said, "Hey, Mike, I got a phone call from somebody in Atlanta, Georgia, that said that they were observing, a bunch of people had been observing for quite some time, over an hour and a half, a very bright light in the sky that appeared to be approaching Comet Holmes in the constellation of Perseus. And they described it as cometary. It said it had a tail, but anyway, I don't know what this is. It's sort of just breaking tonight. But if you're interested in this, while you're listening to the next song that I play from Finn O'Loughlin, you might hop on the web and go to Ken Stedman's site at cyberspaceorbit.com, or do a quick search on I really don't know because I haven't done it yet. So go to Kent's site, cyberspaceorbit.com, and see what he has to say. Or I'm sure there's a link over there to that, to the website that where they're talking about this. But more strange things happening up there, and well, you know, we'll just see, as always, what they are or what they aren't. Okay. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And we'll have Richard Allen Miller in about 15 minutes at the top of the hour here, okay? In the meanwhile, this is Finn O'Loughlin on the web, finnoloughlin.com. You can link there directly from my site at mikehagan.com. And this song is called Ode to FC Part 2. Dumb kind of name, but they named it right because we behave the same. We are dumb all over.
we are. Dumb all over, near and far. Dumb all over, left and right. People we is not reptile. Country in a book of religion, not by a lump or a heap or a smidgen of foolish rules of ancient date, designed to make you all feel weak when you fall, spindle and mutilate those young believers from a neighboring state. Dumb all over, yes we are. Dumb all over, near and far. Dumb all over, left and right. People we is not reptile. Dumb all over, yes we are.
Splutter like a sad old man, slow consumption of who I am, and I'd pave the way to something great if I only had the will to concentrate. But for now I'll make a swift escape, a gentle ride to a gentle day. So take me down to the water side so I can see the tide coming in. Take me down to the water side so I can be my one and only friend. Cause there's something in the way they laugh, pointed fingers and photographs, hidden agendas and cordial masks, take what they can get at every chance. And I'd love to join their special race, material things, superficial embrace, but I'm so overwhelmed with fear, feels like a time to disappear. So take me down to the water side so I can lift away the muddy veil. Take me down to the water side so I can wash away the self-betrayal. Cause there's so many people right round here, but no one ever seems to get that near. Judgment spin the minds of fools, scornful faces, ridicule. And I'd love to join with hands and hearts if I could only bring down half my guards. The cushioned life of an iconoclast wears me down so bloody fast. Oh, so take me down to the water side so I can see the wistful sky again. Take me down to the water. Can't be my one and only friend.
All right, that's Finn O'Loughlin. That song is called Waterside. Great, great music from this young man. Born in Ireland, lived, I think, back and forth, actually, between the UK and the States now. I think makes his home in New York. His, I don't want to call her his manager or his, I don't know, PR person or friend or whatever. All I know is her name is Jackie, and she's cool, and she's real nice, and she's communicated with me back and forth for the last couple months and shared all this great music with me. And so anyway, Jackie, thank you. And Finn, thank you. Wonderful, wonderful music. And, you know, it's John Lennon's anniversary of his death, the anniversary of Jim Morrison's birthday. And, you know, tonight, actually in London, there was a concert tonight. Zeppelin got back together. Led Zeppelin played tonight with John Bonham's son, Jason Bonham, playing drums. And if you haven't heard that guy, I mean, you know, he's a grown man and a kick-ass drummer these days. So anyway, Jason Bonham playing drums for Zeppelin in London tonight. So will miracles never cease? I'm sure that was an amazing thing that went down tonight. So I'd love to hear the news about that. At any rate, this guy Finn O'Loughlin, and I wish that I've actually spoken to him personally. I haven't yet, and I hope to in the future. But he's making great music and writing great songs, and we'll hear some more throughout the program tonight. Okay, all right. At the top of the hour here, Richard Allen Miller, and everybody, including myself, looking forward to having Richard back on the air. We'll do that in just a few minutes here. In the meantime, we'll play one more song in just a couple minutes. It'll give me a few minutes to get my voice back and make sure we got everything together with the technology. But I'll just say one more time, take a look over at the forum on the website. I'm just sort of scrolling through there right now. And there's a bunch of interesting and fun stories that are being posted and talked about there, including these comets that I mentioned during the space weather segment. You know, there is something about things that happen in the sky, and I actually am a real believer in this whole as above, so below business. I don't think it's just, you know, a fun, you know, phrase that, you know, that just sort of sounds nice. I actually think it's real, and that you have to sort of pay attention to it. So when I see things that are happening in the stars, like are happening right now, and that are going to happen over the next 2 weeks, I really pay attention, and because I think they sort of herald, similar or corresponding events down here on the surface of the planet. Now, you know, you can call it foolishness, or you can call it whatever you want. I'm just saying this is the way I see things, you know. But I'm not alone. A lot of our ancestors saw it that way. So, of course, you know, who's to judge, you know, how well they did. But at any rate, you know, time will tell, I guess, as always. But if you take a look over there on the forum at MikeHagan.com, just click on the link that says Radio Orbit Forum. Man, there's all kinds of great stuff. Fractal holographic DNA functions. Videos about Ron Paul, who's about the only guy that I think is a reasonable candidate for the president, for the presidency of this country in the next election, if we make it that far, if we have an election. The Shapocalypse. Yeah, electric caverns. Yep. Well, just take a look over there at the forum at MikeHagan.com, and you don't have to join up or anything. You can read all the stuff that people are writing about and posting, but pretty interesting stuff that's happening over there. And I always learn a lot just by going to my own website these days. So thanks to everybody who participates over there and posts and shares all the stuff that they know. All right. Let's take a break here. We'll play another song from Finn O'Loughlin. It's called Home Dry. And then we'll come back with Richard Allen Miller right at the top of the hour here. Wonderful stuff ahead of us for the next couple hours, so stick around. I appreciate you listening. It's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. This is Finn O'Loughlin. The song is called Home Dry. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Richard Allen Miller. Thank you.
Your effort seems dead like a pain, and the light on the tunnels are bursting flame. But now your dream's here and your journey ends. There's no more call for fear, no need for tears. Your journey's been long, you've traveled so far. But I guess all yours, you're still aware of who you are. Now you're home dry.
You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
Hello?
That's right, you are listening to Radio Orbit. My name is Mike Hagen, and our guest for the rest of the program is Richard Allen Miller. He is a favorite here on Radio Orbit with many of my listeners and myself included, and good reason for that. Richard has been at the forefront of many different fields through a long and diverse career. He's a physicist, graduate work at MIT. He's been all around the place, SRA, Stanford Research Institute, worked with Buharich there, Stanley Krippner, colleague of his back in 1973, and co-authored a paper called The Holographic Concept of Reality, a document whose implications for psychoenergetic systems are only now becoming realized. And we're going to talk with Richard about that and many other things tonight, hopefully, primarily psychic phenomenon. And we'll get right to it here and say hello. Thank you. Welcome back, Richard. Hi.
Hi. How are you? What's your weather like there?
Oh, man, it's
cold, huh?
It's cold, but it's like raining and snowing and the ice at the same time. We're sort of right in the middle where it can't decide whether it wants to rain or snow. And so we get the, I won't call it good fortune, but we get ice, and, man, it can be treacherous. And right now, that's what's happening out there. We've had all kinds of power outages, and I'm actually glad that we're on the air. So
I'm supposed to say hello to my girlfriend in Colorado Springs.
Uh-huh.
It was 11 below zero with wind chill factors and two more days of snow.
Yeah, I think it sort of moves from there to here, and that's sort of exactly what they're saying, that we need to sort of hang on for another few days before this moves through. But we had it last year, like, you know, mid Missouri. You never know what you're going to get here.
Missouri has got I have friends in Eolia, and I know what Missouri's like. You mentioned Ron Paul. They're all in the same bag, and you're right. We may not even have elections. What about someone like Dennis Kucinich? What do you think of him?
Well, I don't know. If I were going to, I'd like to see Kucinich and Paul maybe on the same ticket or something.
Department of Peace.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, the Department of Peace. That's that's the Department of War in the Orwellian sense or whatever. I don't trust anybody.
You shouldn't. But
I tell you this: the reason that I like Ron Paul is because if you look at the way the guys voted over the last 10 terms of Congress, I mean, if nothing else, he's consistent, and so I think that he's telling the truth because the things that he says are consistent with the way that he's acted for the last 12 years. But that's my primary concern right now. I'm just looking for someone to tell the truth, for God's sake.
It's not going to happen because there are no more statesmen. The problem is it's no longer about elections or the people power, because they're not really in power. It's the New World Order. There's a video on the internet called Zeitgeist.
I've seen it. I shared it with a lot of people, yeah.
That runs it down, chapter and verse. Yeah. And it's much worse than that. Let's start with astrology. You liked astrology? I had a number of different grants that we did studies with. The first one had to do with the Department of Interior.
Is this when you had grants when you were working for a Department of Interior?
No, I worked for Navy Intelligence, unbeknownst, and they, Well, who could have figured?
That's the only way it goes. I mean,
well, let me say this: when I was doing my research for SEAL Corporation, Navy SEALs didn't exist back then.
Yeah,
and we were anesthesiology. That's where they had the boys from Brazil. The guy in this one lab was a guy named Delgado, and he had monkeys with chip implants. This is for Yale. And the other one over there was Dr. Moore, and he was doing ketamine, telepathy, and BZ. Mm. We discovered that certain mind alterants, when a vet took a certain mind alterant, it changed the reality of all the people around him. And how does that, not about contact high. How does that work?
Mm.
You know, and that's what has led me.
It's
like when it's not about contact high, that's just an expression. How does the physics of that work? Well, I'm writing a 3-book series on the non-local mind, and I have come to the conclusion it's about microtubules and the way different waters generate through the microtubule. There's like 7 basic forms of water, Brown's gas, sonoluminescence, blah, blah, blah. But it's about that form of it predicated on how it gates with the microtubule and projects an electromagnetic field into the universe. And we're dialoguing, we're changing the universe as we speak. Astrology. The Department of Interior wanted us to prove something that came out of Yugoslavia. A lot of cosmobiology, that's the term that was used back in the late 60s.
Cosmobiology?
Cosmobiology.
And what did they mean by that?
There's a relationship. Space and time aren't real. Which means that storm on Jupiter is somehow related to what's going on in your stomach or something like that. And that's, you know, a metaphor. But I meant that storm, that big twisting thing, somehow, even though there are no laws of physics that would, you know, equate that, somehow relates to what's going on, as above, so below. That storm on Jupiter is doing something in the stomach, let's say.
Yeah.
Okay, the planet Uranus and the Sun and the Earth, when they're in a certain geometric alignment, a major earthquake will occur on Earth, and that's with a 3-sigma error coefficient. That means a 99.9975% probability of that event occurring. How does that work? And what we did is we used Boeing's 360. They had a big old IBM. That was like one of the biggest computers back then. And we jammed it through the data and confirmed, going all the way back about 2 centuries, and confirmed every single time that Uranus and the Sun and the Earth in a certain alignment, a certain physical, geometrical alignment, major earthquake happened, period. At the same time, I was West Coast. I ran most all of the projects for Dr. Carl Schleicher, shall we name names, who was MRU out of Washington, D.C. My counterpart, Dr. Wilbur Franklin, was at Kent State, did most of his work in the deep labs up in Chicago. We used to call it Chicago. And
well, that's where I grew up, you know.
There you go.
Oh,
you know exactly.
It is Chicago, trust me.
Chicago, yeah. And he found in the same study, I did the computer work, he did the catfish. It turns out we had an early warning sensor that catfish changed their skin resistance massively 8 hours before the earthquake happened. And the Department of Interior wanted more data.
Huh. All right. So this stuff, although we sort of started off just wild and crazy, but it all relates to what we're sort of going to concentrate on tonight, and that's psychic phenomenon. And before we get too deeply into it, I want to know more about the early days, and if you would, some of your experiences back with Andre Puharich and that whole gang. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because we've talked off the air a little bit about it, and I think it's really interesting.
Okay, so I had, at any given time, maybe 100 projects ongoing. SRI, China Lake, Argonne, Boeing Scientific Research Labs, UW, and of course, you know, there was all kinds of places. We had, on the West Coast, I had a tour going all the way up into B.C. We did some stuff up in looking at artifacts. There's one in Iceland. What do you think that is? It's 47 miles straight long.
What do you mean an artifact?
There is a website. They have spotted it from space. It's under snow. It's 47 miles long, and there's a second one next to it that is slightly at a different angle that's less than 18 miles long.
But what are they?
Artifacts.
Nobody knows what they are?
No.
But they're not. But they don't appear to be natural. Oh, everything's
natural.
Well,
no, they're not natural. It's a straight line. It looks like a box, a building, 47 miles long. Might be a craft. Who knows what it is? It's on the internet.
Cool.
Yeah, well, maybe. Aliens versus Predator Part 2 is coming out.
Well, hell, we got plenty of Predators here already.
Yeah, well, not like these guys. I'll tell you, Dark Horse knows how to write them. The second astrology one I did, we found that you could predict the sex of women with their lunar sex cycle. It turns out that when a woman is born, let's say in Missouri, and something is engrammed into her with the phase of the sun, earth, and the moon. And if she moves to a different part of the world, her period changes.
Hmm.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I know stories about girls.
Yeah.
If you get a group of girls that all live together, or work together, even at a strip club or something like that, they all tend to sort of synchronize their ovulation.
Well, we talked about that as contact high, but no. Nice try. Yeah, this is really interesting. Time of day, blah blah blah. It sets something up in the body, and so really, is it setting it up in the body, or are you noticing your body in other ways of projecting? Jungian psychology would suggest that your children aren't real, and I'm not real. Only you are real in a hallucination, and I am a projection of the mad scientist inside you talking to yourself. Well, it goes on and on. It can go into many places like that. I raised my daughter as the younger female part of me, which means I could never really criticize her. I had to, I couldn't have done that, Paula. She did things that was ballsy, and I wouldn't have done that. But she's, I was proud of her because she's like the younger feminine part of myself, and it's the way I can relate to myself in connecting with higher parts of myself. The entire universe, as above, so below, like you said it, is related like that as one worldview where you can infer by metaphor. And metaphors are the way we group information basically into eight fundamental memes. Timothy Leary, one of my teachers, called it neurologic circuits. He was a little mechanistic. I've chosen to do the quant of air and the quant of the water. I'm looking at it in one of the new books I'm writing for Nick Begich, and I'm publishing three books with Nick, by the way. It's really exciting. The new one that we're going to talk about tonight is on the work I did with Navy SEALs.
The ESP book.
Yeah. The second one's already written. It's on power tools. And then the third one, we'll cap it with the physics on the non-local mind. Alex Kavarin and my colleague, he's just an incredible genius. He's a Finnish physicist, several others up there, has written some incredible work on the nature of water and how they move through a microtubule. And I believe he has broken through. With my work on Schumann's resonance and the holographic universe, I think we've got some new models to move us in the 22nd century, where physics will become more like magic, like the Aborigines and the Hopi.
Huh.
I like the metaphor. I watched. I know the Navy sent me in once to study the Hopis, and a couple of shamans were there. They were smaller than Thomas Banaka, and of course at that time Grandfather Joseph was dead. But he's the one. You were talking about Jim Morrison? Ha, ha, ha. He's the one that died at the crossroads when Jim Morrison went through there at age 10. And that's why Jim Morrison is still alive.
Is that right?
Yeah, I got a letter from him from Louisiana less than 6 years ago working at a laser company. He's a fat Jim Morrison. There he is. That's in a book called Secret and Suppressed by Harrell Press. Tom Lytle wrote that. There's another one in there by an old friend of mine, Michael James Reconosuccio, who's in a federal pen right now. He was Captain Crunch out of Tacoma. He was doing a lot more than that kind of thing. Whenever we'd talk, he'd take me down to Seawolf Marina. We'd go out in his boat at high speed into Puget Sound to talk. He's a crazy man.
Reconosuccio, he was involved in the whole drug...
Oh, man.
The CIA
Michael
drug
James
running awesome, right?
Reconosuccio, he's my friend.
Yeah.
And 20 years later, after I moved down here...
I know that whole story. Holy sh...
Yeah, boom. I gotcha. And not only that, what does it mean when I know three different people in that book, Secret and Suppressed?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. It gets weirder and weirder. The metaphor is that when I was working with Hopi, this Hopi was making this sand painting. And while he was making it, I was watching these clouds like in a science fiction movie come out of nowhere. You know, like a spacecraft or something, something out of a sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
This other Hopi looked at me and he winked at me and went, swept his hand through the sand painting, and the weather stopped and went right back to normal. And I sat there, and I looked at the sand painting, and you know, it looked like a solid-state physics device.
Hmm.
You know, technology has many faces.
You know, it's so weird. You remind me of... there's this Hopi grandfather that I know. His name is Grandfather Martin Gashwizioma.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
Well, he's an amazing man. And when I met him, we talked a little bit about the relationship between the Hopi and the Tibetan people. And there's this actual physical resemblance between the two.
Well, that's right, because they came from the same
And you mentioned the sand painting, and I'm thinking about the mandala. They do the same thing over there.
My goodness sakes, it seems like it creeps into everything. Huh?
Holy cow.
Yeah, weaves and weaves. That's the fabric of weaving space. But, you know, the Aborigines, when I was doing my ESP stuff, that was Apollo 14 mission studies with Edgar Mitchell.
Mm.
And I was at mission control doing these experiments. We basically blackmailed NASA into doing our experiments with James Hertak and a couple of others.
Hertak wrote the Thoth book and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, but there
the Keys
is,
of Enoch, I think it was his,
Twitter.
Right? Was it Keys of Enoch was what Hertak wrote.
Yeah. Hertak was an interesting... He was out of Chicago, too, you know?
And, figures.
Huh?
I said figures.
Yeah, there you go. Well, he was pretty interesting. Anyway, he... Mitchell.
I want to know about Edgar Mitchell because, please, talk about Edgar Mitchell. And then you got to tell me about Buharic.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get there. Mitchell, right in the spacecraft, said there's something outside the craft. He said it was an Aborigine. That Aborigine built a fire in Central Australia and went up into the smoke and joined Mitchell. That is on tape. Mitchell saw it. How does that work? You know, technology, metaphor, what is a metaphor but to, this is Gregory Bateson, and I'm doing a direct quote, what is your metaphor but to serve your paradox? And so you have to have two ox out in the field.
Hmm.
It's all in the way you choose to group your pieces of information. Is it physical, emotional, intellectual? There's eight basic ways. Those are your Fibonacci. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, everybody talks about it. So I've designed my books as they're on the evolution of consciousness and how to power tools, you know, foods you can eat, things you can do with brain drivers and virtual audio. My virtual audio chapter is called Continuous Breathing and Virtual Audio. It's the quantum air. And there's tools out there that are in different levels of your essence, and you have a physical body, and you know there's sound waves outside the body that if you use certain sounds, it will affect your heart and electromagnetically. How does that all work? Well, everything's chunked in the way we see physical body, hearing body, blah, blah, blah.
Let me ask you a question just about that just comes to mind. I mean, only in the last maybe 50 years, 100 years, I guess, if you really push it, but, there are all kinds of electromagnetic waves that are floating around these days that weren't present. And, we're you and me, everybody, wherever we sit, we're being intersected by all kinds of different waves.
Oh,
cell phones and this, that.
Yeah, but they're toxic. They're extremely toxic. You know,
I mean,
it's worse. How did they do it on Saturday Night Live?
But if they're that toxic, I mean, why are you and me able to still converse about it and keep a reasonable, you know, tenor about our conversation?
Well, the New World Order. We were talking about that earlier. We'll keep this focused here because, basically, there's too many people on Earth. Yeah. And so the guy at Motorola, during my period, I knew him. He was on 60 Minutes six times before he finally died. It was which is Mike Wallace. Hmm. And the sixth time, he flat out said, this is on logs on 60 Minutes. They had all these different frequency bands up there that they could have uplinked for the cell phones, and they purposefully chose this bandwidth there that had an LD50 ratio. Oops.
Yeah, and tell people what LD50 means.
Lethal dose 50.
That's right. Which I love it. I think it's a great. It's one of my favorite, actually, sort of scientific descriptions. But it's sort of, you know, morbid. Certainly, obviously.
Why do you think they? There's no such thing as a war in Iraq.
Tell people what LD50 means.
Huh?
Tell people what LD50 means.
Lethal dose 50. That means
when half of the population that take it die, it's a lethal dose for 50%.
No, it means that exposure, a certain level of exposure, will kill 50% of the humans.
Right.
That's what lethal dose means. Like rats in a maze. There's too many people on Earth. The New World Order needs to thin it. And so February, they're going to release a virus.
This coming February, you think?
Yes, it's going to happen. I already know something. They're going to release a virus like the avian flu. It will be a bogus virus. Where they're going to get you is in the inoculation, and they're going to require, in Missouri, for example, that anyone that wants to go to a public school, in grade school, junior high, or high school, has to be inoculated. Now, that is giving up your civil rights, and it's the inoculation that's going to thin the public.
Hmm.
It gets better and better. Zeitgeist pointed it out. How did George Carlin put it? God has everything, but he needs more money. it's a shame. Puharich. Andrea Puharich was a legend in my time. He was already going strong when I came into Navy in 1967. He was not at the University of Chicago, which is where he was sometimes. He was mostly on the East Coast at that time, but he hung out with us. Krippner was all our mentor. Krippner is the lodestone, you know, that attracted all the paranormal, like Dr. Carl Schleicher.
Hmm.
You know, Dr. Carl Schleicher, who I worked for, was in the same desk in Wisconsin Avenue for 47 years. Who's that guy?
But you worked with Krippner, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Krippner was the one that brought me to New York in 1970, and I was published in Psychoenergetic Systems, and then later had the lead paper, even over Sarfatti and some of those others, in Gordon and Breach's version. I was at the first at Prague. That's where my paper was presented. And then New York was on Psychoenergetic Systems, and they had Krillian. That's what my... That's where I first put the edge. I went in and showed what Krillian photography was, and it's not aura. It's arbitrary, but what it did lead us toward, which nobody talks about, bioluminescence. Mm-hmm. You got different places on the body that are emitting oils. You walk into a Krillian field, and they'll luminesce, and if you scan that right, you can have internal state function definitions.
Amazing.
And that's one of the projects I did. Of, you know, the 100 at any given moment I had. I had staff everywhere, and they had me just do whatever I wanted. You know, I was, like, given free rein. This is the difference between the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, but so all of that, I mean, that research has to lead to profound conclusions, and where did it go?
You mean Project Solo and synthetic telepathy in the mind work?
Please.
What's that?
Yes, please.
Well... Target got busted for using synthetic telepathy 2 years ago for stopping shoplifting in their stores. And now, in January, just before the big plagues, Walmart's going to have in the center of their store a thing called the center. It's step inside it voluntarily, they'll beam you with synthetic telepathy at the store's on sale prices. It gets weirder and weirder.
It really is so strange.
Hey, there's lots of things out there. You know, the work we did on that, I did some of that with Alan Frey's work. There's a paper on my website on that. But, you know, one of them is mind reading, how they do that. Well, when you're conscious, like you are right now, you're in a beta state, everything that you're thinking while I'm talking to you, you know, a little, this is Rick, and I think I'm going to ask him this question. I'm going to, this is bullshit, or, you know, that kind of thing. All of that is sub-vocalized in your throat. And I have a little mic in there, and someone can be across the street beaming microwave at you, and I can know what you're saying. Thinking inside. That's an off-the-shelf piece of equipment that I have websites where you can go buy it.
Huh.
It gets weirder and weirder. There's technologies now that do things to you that we don't even have definitions of. What is that? How's that feel?
Oh, God.
You're paranoia? I think that once this election happens and everything goes to hell, because it will, that the country is going to fragment into about 9 little provinces, shall we call it provinces, where you choose where you're going to live predicated on how many civil rights you want to give up. You got Florida, and you got up there in Montana or Alaska. Nick wants me to buy some land up north of the Eagle River, and pretty attractive. Sheila's a 5-star chef. She used to cook gourmet for the museum there, hoity-toits. She wants to have a destination resort in the wilderness where people can go for sanctuary. My girlfriend Jan has very good, and I do, have very good friends up in Sandpoint that are, it's a Quaker retreat, 47 years, called Peaceable Kingdom. That whole area up there in Bonner's Ferry looks pretty interesting. Down in Coeur d'Alene and near Spokane, that's gone. But, you know, some places, it's too cold for people. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So the crop, I decided, the crop I want to grow, I'm going to dig gallium and arsenic, and I'm going to grow gallium arsenide crystals, cleave them into little solar panels. What do you think?
I like it.
Parts, yeah. Yeah. No wood consciousness here. All of that came from Roswell. That was IBM. You remember when they had those little vacuum things where they put the paint on one side and the little thing would spin?
Yeah,
that all came from Roswell.
What do you mean?
Huh?
What do you mean?
General Corso, Day After Roswell, talks about all of that. He's got a whole chapter in there on me. He said, oh, yeah, there was this whiz kid out of Seattle, codenamed Max. I was known as Maximum Overdrive or Mad Max. I was crazy. And, well, I podcast. You know, I didn't have an extra cylinder. I had a couple of them, you know, like a Duesenberg or something. And people were afraid of me. I foamed when I get excited.
Oh, my God. All right. We got to take a break. And we'll come back. And, you know, and I promised that we weren't going to get sidetracked, but we are.
Yeah,
but
I won't. I'll keep focused.
No. Now we have to. We're going to come back. You got to tell me the Roswell story.
Nice talking.
No, that's the cliffhanger. Back in a minute. All right. Everybody, Richard Allen Miller. Back with him in just a minute. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is Finn O'Loughlin. And the song is called Walk My Way. Check this guy out.
The unknown purpose of the shell. When you walk my way, nothing's here to stay, and nothing can compare the naked soul that I bear, and nothing can deceive when your eyes are looking at me. Oh, when you walk my way, oh, when you walk my way,
Finn O'Loughlin. That's called Walk My Way. You can find information on the web at Finn O'Loughlin, FinnOLOCHLAINN, FinnOLoughlin.com, and also on CD Baby. Just do the same search for that name, CDBaby.com. Check out his new disc. Incredible stuff. From Finn O'Loughlin. All right. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's about 12:34 or so now on the 11th of December, 2007. Can you believe it? Almost the new year, as it were. And we're going to say hello again to Richard Allen Miller and say, all right, we got to talk about Roswell.
About what?
Roswell.
Well, I wasn't there, and...
I know, but I want to know. But I want to know as much as you can tell me about what you've heard and what you know. And
okay, aliens don't crash spaceships.
Right. I mean, well, how could they? I mean, if they got here, they're probably not going to crash.
Okay. Well, it's like a Lexus blowing up. They don't do it. That means it's a Trojan horse.
Hmm.
Thank you, Ted Lohman.
Who's Ted Lohman?
Ted Lohman. Yeah. And they left bodies, they left weapons, and they left technology. What do you think they left? Solid state physics. The person before me that.
Which was your specialty?
Well...
or one of them.
Yeah, see, I was going to be an astrophysicist, and I was working for DuPont. Oh, yeah, there's your president.
Who didn't you work for?
Huh?
I said, who didn't you work for?
Well, I worked for the... They had me pegged as a junior in high school, and Navy was grooming me all the way through from Washington State University. Raymond Band, a very little-known physicist, chairman of physics from England... written this mathematical physics, band theory, and event horizons, precursor waves, you know, that kind of thing. And we had to suffer through eigenfunctions and all of that in the graduate school. And then I went to work for DuPont back at the experimental research station, and they sent me back to graduate school. And I was planning to do astrophysics. I wanted to be an astronaut, you know. And they... No, son, we got another job for you, boy. And they sent me into solid-state physics. I started with Dr. R.B. Murray at Delaware. He was a Nobel Prize winner, and then they had me pick up courses with Penrose, Princeton, and then I ended up at MIT doing fluidic devices and NORNAND logic. Cornyn had developed a different type of computer using puffs of air called fluidic devices, and they could stack them. Make smaller computers than monolithic circuits, which came from Roswell. And I could never figure out, they were perfect for space, gamma rays didn't damage them. You know, all your chip has only an 8-year half-life, which means that after 8 years, your checksum errors are down the toilet, i.e., it's bad news in space. Why would they go to solid-state physics? Well, it turns out my master's thesis was Navy's first time travel experiments, because what I was doing was tunneling event horizons, precursor waves. It was doing excitation emission, VK center luminescence. And apparently, I could move a particle into the future 6.6 milliseconds with a precision of 4 nanoseconds. I got right there. That was my master's thesis. And that's when they sent me to Boeing. I was doing my research with Boeing, and then when Boeing lost the B-1, they sent me into anesthesiology. I was there until 79. I was going to say something really important about that. In the 70s, it was about blue sky and discovery in physics. In the 80s, it was about direction and application. That's when the New World Order took over, i.e., there was no more interest in discovery. They now felt they had enough technology. They just wanted to manage money. That's why I brought in George Carlin. An example on that would be in the 70s, we called it astral projection. In the 80s, Targ and Puthoff call it remote viewing. And the problem is, I write for Emergent Mind with Leon Sidoroff, a genius. There's a group of us on the internet called Emergent Mind Journal. And there you're going to find some of the best papers you've ever seen. Because there's all kinds of Kavarainen, me, there's other people, my ex-wife, Iona. Lots of people writing for that, and that's where your best real papers come out, because most, and it was Sidoroff pointed out to me, he said, what happened? It's like a brain drain from the 70s to the 80s. Everything changed in research. The research we did was hot and dead on. The 80s have gone boring.
Yeah,
who knows,
yeah.
You know. Well?
Well, I think there was a general sense of that in a cultural sense. It was like, in the late 60s, look, I was born in 64, right?
Oh,
I mean, so I'm
God, I was in graduate.
That's what I mean, but I mean, even me as a young boy, like 1969, I was 5 years old when they landed on the moon, and then I grew up in the 70s, and I thought, by the time I was 10 years old, I thought, my God, by the time the year 2000 rolls around, I'm going to be dancing around Zeta Reticuli, you know?
Nah, we're already on Mars, you know.
Right, but then everything stopped.
Yeah, they didn't stop.
Well, it stopped for me.
No, it didn't, yes, it went.
You know, for the public.
To, these guys and those guys, you know, the little dot they put in India on your forehead. And it's the New World Order, they took over. And what happened is, you're not human anymore. You're just a number in a big cash crunch, and there's too many of you.
What about Mark?
Depressing in that sense of it. I'm old enough now. My girlfriend says it right. She says, I just want to go hide out and live the remainder of my life in quiet solitude. I can't change anything. You know, I think this century will probably be considered the very blackest in mankind. And how much are aliens involved? Oh, yeah. Well, how did Bob Dylan put it? Everybody's got to serve somebody. That's why there's hierarchies of aliens. You know, you find that in the old Bibles. They talk about Kether, make a distinction between Yahweh and Yod-Heh-Vah-Heh, and then there's the veils of Isis. And so, you know, Ain, Ain Sof, and Ain Sof Ur. There's a hierarchy out there, and who knows where it stops. New World Order, just control freaks. And, you know, it isn't going to work because, like X-Files, who's manipulating whom?
Right.
Obscure.
I mean, the idea that somebody's in control or whatever, that is facetious.
Well, it's more than just control. Like, you know, Walmart is, it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible plague in terms of, I saw this documentary, they don't care what happens to anybody outside their building. That's why the most of the crime in a given city is in a Walmart parking lot, because they don't police it. They don't really care about you after they've got your money. They're good to go. And I'll tell you, it's the attitude of it. of, you know, it's unfortunate. It's about intentionality. It's your purpose. What is your intent for mankind and so on? And I have to tell you, there's a need for a thinning, because what's happening now isn't right either. You know, Iraq is a bunch of thugs, and the people over there, you know, the reason we're over there is because there's something buried in northern Iraq, and the Jesuits discovered it. They were the CIA for the Vatican 200 years ago. Whenever something, you know, name of the rose, and when anything was weird going on, they sent in their scholars, the Jesuits. The Jesuits wrote a book about the Yazidi. It's up in the northern Iraq. Something buried, probably up there in the city of Ur, at the Stargate or something. I don't know, but Bush wanted it. That's why we're there. Interesting, huh?
Oh, God, too much, man.
I'm sorry. You wanted to know about Andrea Pujar. Andrea Pujar.
Yeah, a little bit about him when you worked with him.
I didn't work for him. He was doing some projects at SRIIE. He brought in Uri Geller. And Uri Geller was his hot flash find. Guy was real. And I came in. Because, you know, Pujar was one of my teachers. He's someone I keyed off of like Leary. These guys set the tone, pace, and dot connecting that I picked up the baton and ran next with. And Andrea Pujarić, in my opinion, was probably one of the finer physicists ever. His book, Beyond Telepathy, is a masterpiece. Even back then, even today, it is a milestone, like Doors of Perception. Yeah, well, I put Andrea Pujar in that category. And so when I started doing all my little projects and coming up with harebrains, you know, it's as real as that one, I always connected with him to get his first take in the way I might want to approach that. I had a lot of respect for him. He was older. And when I went to SRI, I caught Geller cheating, and I busted him. And it...
How so?
Huh?
Tell people a little bit about Geller.
Geller could do things, but not when he wanted to. And, of course, he was a womanizer, so he liked to put the make on women, and so sometimes he couldn't pull it off, so he had to fake it.
How is it possible? Well,
How is it possible?
No. Let me rephrase. What is your understanding or explanation of the fact that he could do things at certain times, but not at other times?
Or like the shamans that change the weather? Yeah, that's interesting.
But is it because of astrological configurations, the weather planets are?
No, I think it's your mind's eye and the way you direct it. The first book in my series is called ESP Induction Through Forms of Self-Hypnosis. I proved, we did like 280,000 individuals. Everybody. Oh, Jesus, what a big project that was. I have all the seal papers, by the way, that are really at some point. We had a couple of religious churches that were oriented around parapsychology. Sam Psych in Seattle, there was a bunch of them. We had old ladies from the church helping us do all this testing, you know. Well, it was, you know, I mean, labor. And I discovered, based on Dr. Milan Riesel, again from Yugoslavia, he came over in 68, sat in my home for 4 days, and we talked, and I did his mind, and he is the one that led me to develop a mathematical equation for consciousness. It's it's not an elegant one. It's a real simple algebraic expression for consciousness, but I have proven that when you're in an altered state, a very specific altered state, this one right there, a little windows of three or four this ways and that ways, of which hypnosis has more than 72 different physical states that we can measure. This one from that one, heart rate, pulse, whatever. And there's four of them in there, and when you go in that state, your ability in guessing improves 400 times over natural from where you are right now. And that, how does that work?
Huh.
Non-statistical. Well, third book is going to sum it up as a non-local mind. I think you're creating a reality. And ESP is when you put your consciousness over their area. You know, out on a limb with Shirley MacLaine or, you know, that kind of thing. And all these different altered states, you know, taking acid, sex, whatever, all these different places, you can do something different that you can't in conscious states. And that's why you have altered states, because you're not using other places in the brain. That's what brain drivers are for, is to move you to a different place in the brain. I'm going to suggest that the brain is a four-dimensional hologram of five space, predicated where you set yourself up in brain, you can change the movie.
How does the brain relate? What's the difference between the brain and the mind?
Well, the body is probably an antenna, and you got this big crystal on top with amorphous semiconductors constantly changing and doing dialogue with humans' resonance, et cetera. So it's like a big antenna with a crystal on top.
But the mind is, it seems to be like something that we is disembodied. We sort of we don't really place it somewhere in, you know.
Well, meditators have always told you that's what the original brain drivers were for, is to go into alpha and theta states, because with a Persinger and David Martz, Brian Murphy have written consciousness in the brain, and where they've actually enlightenment has to do with these places in the brain, not that place. That's why all your saints said to meditate and, to practice. But guess what? There's other places in the brain. We're going to give you a paranormal one right now that's really weird. There's a place in the brain. Oh, first, go to Google and do the Mars Project. And then look for keyword Wernicke correction. This is a specific place in the brain. It's just below the RAS, reticular activating center. And if you take a person into that hypnotic state, to that place, you have memories. Anybody, from China, you here, whatever, all have memories of working on Mars for the U.S. government. How does that work? There's something going on. It's not exactly the Matrix, but you get the idea. And what I'm trying to do is, with Nick, is take, and Nick's my publisher, Earth Pulse Press, we're going to take the terrible weapons, microwave things that I did. I did all the mind control stuff for Navy, and somehow apply them to the evolution of consciousness rather than for controlling. It's like doing a weapon, now how do we use nuclear energy for medicine? That's what I'm trying to do. And find a different spin so you can take... what do you call that? Empowerment, and take responsibility for yourself. And that is going to take a lot of work, because none of you, even me, until I was 58, I didn't meditate. I knew I was supposed to, but I didn't. And it takes like 30 years to get to these places. Well, I said, okay, how am I going to get there quick using my physics? Brain drivers, virtual audio, imaging, things, these are power tools, food.
Yeah, so these are technological
assistance. Right, it'll get you there. Like my brain right now is, in 4 years, 3.5 years, I have achieved a same kind of brain state that meditators for 35 years go to. It took me only 3 years. I'm there. And not, that's why I caught up. Maybe I'll build a TARDIS. Back to the Future. On Mars. Whatever.
Tell me more about the Mars Project.
Well, it's an hypnotic, it's a style of hypnosis like pedophiles. They have certain kinds of shows and gates and places, how they do it, where they can extract memories.
Yeah, keywords and triggers and all this. Yeah.
But everyone, cross-culturally, put through a certain protocol, memories of working for the U.S. government on Mars.
And what's the keyword? Wernicke?
Wernicke correction.
How do you spell Wernicke?
Oh, don't do this to me.
All right,
Warren.
All right,
Warren. Warren. Yeah. Warren.
Okay, is Wernicke correction.
Is a place in the brain like the pons and the frontal lobes. It's called the Wernicke correction. It's just below the RAS.
All right.
Now, what I'm trying to say here is that different parts of the brain are doing different things. What do you think sleep's about? I'm dreaming.
I don't know.
And daydreaming. And
I think about DMT when I think about that.
No, that's God. But there's something more.
But it's
important
in our brain.
Yeah, it's how you create God is the light. And what that is the Kundalini. It's that little chill that's going up and down the spine, and it's very important because it's NN dimethyltryptamine, not 5-alpha or some of these others, the DIMI, and some of these others, but it's NN dimethyltryptamine. And you know, the interesting thing is that's a very complex and rare chemistry. Ayahuasca is not it. And in fact, the whole BS that's going on between Peru and Brazil and the jealousy would show to me we're not dealing with very, enlightened people. We're dealing with drugs. And really, dimethyltryptamine is how we create our concept of God. Now, there's a more important chemistry called lysergic acid diethylamide. And it's a little different than LSD because what LSD did, when Tim did this, I mean, we did studies on all this stuff. Telepathine was the name for dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah, it was right. Basically a phenomenological.
We did BC, there's a good one. And ketamine, and, you know, I did the keywords. What we discovered, LSD is what I have. That's the juice you experience with my genius. That's the part. Everybody's got it. And what happens is when you take LSD, of course, that breaks down into all the salts within about 20 minutes. It's in the urine. It's gone. And it's the 20 hours, psychotic episodes for me now, but those places are your brain's chemistry in response to this foreign entry. And that's why it's safe and why they use it for LSD therapy, for terminally ill, and people needing to break through. Dimethyltryptamine isn't going to do that. Dimethyltryptamine will give you a sense of God, but LSD take you to your daemon. And you don't need it. You generate it in your own brain because that's what it's about, just like dimethyltryptamine. Dimethyltryptamine is in the occipital region of the cerebral cortex. It comes up as light. And what that spine is, you got that chill going up or down, Sri Aurobindo, go by Krishna, going in different directions. But what that is a little bunch of cilia on the central nervous system that start a resonance going up the spine. You get that chill. Interestingly, that light, this is a paper I wrote for Navy. We did the studies on it. So you want to talk about paranormal, here's one. If you align your spine right, it'll hit your occipital region of the cerebral cortex. It'll hit your pineal gland, and the pineal gland then sets up a resonant cavity right next to the neural cavity. You can get, you know, generate nerve tissue and in some forms because of generating more dimethyltryptamine. And everybody can generate that because you know how to do it without me even telling you how. You somehow instinctively know how to do the chill. There it is, dimethyltryptamine. And, you know, it's...
Is the pineal where we
think that
comes
from? In the back of the brain right there, not just above the in that bump in the back of your head.
Is that the source of DMT, we think?
No, it's, yes, it is. Yes, yes, it is. That light is an electromagnetic field, and it turns out that electromagnetic field is in the bandwidth of visible light.
Huh.
We measured it. And it hits that pineal gland, and off comes the dimethyltryptamine, the chills, et cetera. And if you can have an orgasm, and doubtless, this is another study we did. We did all kinds of crazy things. Imagine us trying to have, orgasms to study.
I love it.
Yeah. It gets louder and better. Okay. The idea of dimethyltryptamine with orgasms is that you can achieve immortality. And that was in some of the old Sanskrit.
How? I don't get it.
Yeah, well...
Come on, you can't say...
Well, I don't believe there's anybody alive on Earth except you right now.
Mm.
And it's all... The song is about you. And metaphor. And all the rest of it's projections of your hallucinations.
Mm.
And you are Alpha, and Omega. And there is a collective unconscious where we all group together, and, oh, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, but that's your voice of reason and voice of coyote. There's this balance. And it's really important to be naughty and then to, because that creates doubt. And doubt, that's how you change. It's not going to change if you just hang on to your belief systems. So, my books are all about how to change belief systems like you would a pair of clothing. I would never dream, there's a pair of pants, I'll never fit in them again from the 70s, or bell bottoms with stitching all over it, right? And I fold it up and I'll never fit in them again, but I would never throw that belief system away.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean I'm going to ever be able to use it. I fold it up nice and neat and put it there, and I go back and look at my pants. Yeah, but
all right, I get it.
Yeah. It's and dimethyltryptamine is to get a sense of your God part of you. It's what leads you to be a seeker and wanting something beyond where you are right now. LSD is the one that does that for you. Once you know where to go, LSD is the one that makes it for you. That's why Leary, and I'm not advocating LSD. I would never take LSD again, man. I've already done enough for that. I would, because maybe courage us to be naughty. We were right there on the edge, man, I'll tell you. We weren't leaving from buildings, but I was running with James, Michael James, we're kind of thinking, there it is. There is, it's important because it led me, for example, instead of exploring outer space, I went into inner space. When Leary gave me my first hit of LSD, he took me up to Deception Pass, Washington State, and I was up in Hurricane Ridge, and I was looking like 2,000 feet down into Puget Sound. And I had made this, what was it called? It was clear light. It was the early 1964, before you were born, and it was still legal. And they wanted to give it, Harvard wanted to give it to some child prodigy, and I was selected from Seattle, Washington. I was known as the Wizard of Oz and Emerald City. Yeah, that's what they called me. And I was this whiz kid. And Leary, looking down, and I'm watching all these, I'd never smoked pot, I'd never done anything, alcohol. I was just a nerd, and athletic nerd. And Leary, I'm watching all these colors peel back, and Leary leaned over and he said, "Wouldn't it be neat to jump?" Ha ha. Yeah, and I heard, I saw all that Aldous Huxley called the doors of perception slamming shut in my mind, and I became fascinated with inner space. It turns out, and that's why all my work is on inner space, the metaphor.
Yeah.
Going, okay, altered states. The altered states part is a metaphor for what's going on outside. It's just into the out of. It's all it's the same. Where does your body stop? Up here? Bones on Star Trek. They've already got devices now where they do sound. It's called cymatics. And light, twiddle it on the outside like magnetic healing, and it changes internal state function. I think it's going to be microtubules and water, and the forms of water going through the microtubule. Now, water has many forms. You know, you got activated water, you got flat water, you got Carrie Reams water, you know, Willard water. You've got sonoluminescence, you've got with the dolphin. Do you know that dolphins are doing cold fusion as their art form?
We're top of the hour. We got to take a break.
Okay.
But we'll come back and we'll talk about. I want to talk more about your ideas of microtubules. And
see how this went?
Yeah. I mean, it always does. It always does. But the dolphins are interesting for sure. We'll come and we'll talk and tie that together. Okay.
You betcha.
All right, everybody. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Richard Allen Miller. On the web at the same name, richardallenmiller.com. You can link over there directly from my site. And in the meantime, we can hear a piece of music here from Finn O'Loughlin. This is called Sticks and Leaves. It's Mike Lister, Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
I've been floating in the sea. sticks and leaves, waves breaking on my chin, sun blistering my skin. And just the other day, I saw a mast in the haze, and I hoped and I prayed that I watched it sail away. I saw faces in the sky laughing at my plight, and the rain was pouring down in the darkness of the night, in the darkness of. Been gazing at the stars, fending off the sharks with my aching hands. I roll with the violent waves. I know the sea keeps me safe. For what reason I could not say. Is it love that I embrace? As bitterness shades my way, I see faces in the sky with tears in their eyes. And the cold wind blows me round in the darkness of the night, in the darkness of the night. Quicken your pain.
And leaves. That's Finn O'Loughlin. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Richard Allen Miller on the web at richardallenmiller.com. And it's a pleasure to have Richard back on the program tonight. Hey, Rick, I have a question that comes from a listener here. With regard to psychic phenomenon in general, they say, is there a personal or cultural use for the betterment of mankind? In other words, why doesn't someone do something extraordinary, not just parlor tricks?
They do. And but with that said, in Sanskrit and some of the Indian studies, the ESP, for example, psychic phenomena, is the throat chakra. It's a lower chakra, and it's called a siddha. It's a detour from going God, going straight to the crown chakra, and you get caught up with your ego and related things, and you stop because you get excited about that place and you lose the big picture. That's probably why. And there are cultures that do extraordinary things. Hopi, Binder, Aborigines, etc. It's the way we choose see what's really going on. We don't notice it.
You have to tell the Don Diego story.
What's that?
You have to tell the Don Diego story.
Which one? I'm not sure. You mean Don Juan?
I'm sorry, the Don Juan's
from... Yeah, me. Well, yeah. I was teaching... Yeah, okay, we mentioned this. I was teaching at Evergreen. That's first talk of Lee. You know, Dixie Lee Ray put this new concept of let the kid choose his curriculum.
Huh.
And who are they going to get to teach magic and witchcraft? Well, they brought me in. Yeah, I was teaching shamanism at the University of Washington, and graduate level. And one of the things that I had done in very early years for Navy again was we went looking for Don Juan, and we didn't find him. We went down into Mexico, Peter First and I. And First, and this is for Carlos Castaneda, and we found Don Janeiro. He was a brujo, and that could fly from one place to another. I got it on film. It is in a very rare magazine called Arts Canada, which is still in print. And this particular one, back in early 70s, was a special issue on stones, bones, and skin. And you can see them flying from one cliff to another like a flying squirrel. I got it on film. There it is.
And he did that frequently.
I'm sorry?
And he did that frequently?
Huh. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way he learned. That's the way he learned.
Is what he did.
Huh.
I, you know, paranormal things occur all over. We did red feather and white feather shaman. I've got Sherpa that go up Mount Rainier barefoot. How do they do that? Well, we did some studies on red feather shamans, the ones that can firewalk, not like down and out in Beverly Hills, but, you know, the ones that really do it. And I watched it. Ooh, that's interesting. And so where's my laboratory? And I wired this guy up, this Indian that could walk on fire. And I found that he was radiating heat in the lower part of his back, like electrophoresis. And that's when the microtubule concept came in.
Oh.
And in other words, the heat was not localized on the skin, but transferred through the body somehow using a network of circulatory system we do not yet have described. Hammeroff and some of these others are talking about it, but really it was Don Bonica who was the real man, not Hammeroff. This guy was the real deal out of Seattle, and we were doing the original acupuncture studies for Nixon. This is Nixon era. He wanted to know, is acupuncture real? Yes, it is. Actually, we found things that worked. How did that work? Not nerves, not blood, not lymphatic. We suggested sodium and potassium ion transport processes through microtubules. This is an electromagnetic, it's a little vortex that's like a cavity wave oscillator, and water has different forms going through that microtubule. Penrose and now Cavarainen's work that suggest that it creates electromagnetic communication from this place to that place, and one of those places is outside the body. That means you're changing reality. Now, how do we train yourself? That's the first step in the three books I'm writing. When I was teaching at Evergreen, Simon and Schuster approached me and two others. There was Arguella and several others that were teaching there. He had written a book called Mandala, and they actually paid us. Ghost Strike, Tales of Power.
Huh.
Yeah, the Nagua is the unspeakable. Reality is that which cannot be known. Everything known is illusion, including physics. Because there's the Hopi. He's got a solid-state physics device. And that seemed to look like it at some level. And when he broke it, it changed. And yet, the Aborigines have a way of relating. Magic is, in my opinion, a higher form of physics. It is the mind's eye. If you've got it in your mind's eye, like when you need to talk about water and microtubule, you got it. And that's that. And that's because that's where it all works.
So everything is consciousness. Everything is mind.
There you go. Now you're getting back into it. It's a non-local mind in a holographic universe. It is... holographic universe doesn't mean it's real. I don't know of any law in physics that's lasted longer than 20 years. Maxwell's equations, right, maybe. But mostly, you know, string theory now, it's, you know, into the out of again. It's not outside of the string. It's the inside. We'll call it, of course, twisted Penrose space. You know, topology. Everything changes.
Right, right.
And so we, and every 20 years or so, except for Maxwell's equations, you know, and hitchhiking out of here, you know, his right-hand rule of thumb. That one seems pretty good for me. I'll tell you, in theory. I'll tell you, though, it's once you've got it in your mind's eye, that's what makes it happen, not the explanation. Yeah. The explanation is to, you know, code it over, but really, it's the envisionment in your mind's eye. And that's why hypnosis, and later some of the other tools that I'm going to discuss, if you develop those, you can do things. You can change the movie. You
know,
like the one we're currently enjoying, like we were discussing earlier, is what I call Horror on Elm Street.
My gosh. Well, that's maybe something that we want to address, because it's like, okay, we have a global nightmare, essentially, right?
You think? Yeah.
Right?
And, pretty awful, isn't it?
Yeah. But on the one hand, you're telling me that, you know, that we have no prayer because the New World Order is about ready to put the clamps down further than they already have. But at the same time, everything is defined by mind, and we have the ability, at least we should, to change the whole thing.
Well, that's why all the bliss bunnies get together for peace night, and or, you know, the Kohotec.
So how does it change? In other words,
what's that?
So how does it change?
It was my grandfather. I'm a Swiss Mason. My grandfather was a Mason, and my great grandfather was Rudolf Steiner's teacher in Switzerland.
I love Rudolf Steiner.
Huh?
I love Rudolf Steiner.
Yeah. Well, it was my grandfather that said, "We are no longer at war in the physical plane. If we want to change things, we change ourselves, and so changes the universe."
Mm.
That's internal, not external. It is about you not changing other people.
So that's the bottom line, is that people should not be worrying about the whole other business,
right.
Be worried about themselves.
Listen, man, it was Joseph Campbell that said it really succinctly. He said, quote, "When you see the kingdom of the Father on earth, the apocalypse has already occurred."
Hmm.
It's perpetual in its potential. The bottom line is, it's always going to be awful. And that has to probably do with Steve Gaskins, who wrote Monday Night Class and later The Farm, how you were birthed. Imagine being in a litter of puppies and how dogs are so devotional and loving, whereas the first thing they did to me, they smacked me on the bottom, they took me away from my mother, and they tried to chop my penis off.
Hmm.
Circumcision. Ha! Oh, he won't remember. Yeah, it sets up our worldviews of belief systems that we're not even in touch with. And you know, belief systems are what make it happen.
Right.
And so you got to be able to change those like you would a pair of clothing.
Hmm.
And it doesn't mean you have to get rid of them. You can be a Christian, you can be an atheist, whatever you want to be, but sometimes it's not appropriate. It won't work. You can't get there from here. You got to change the belief systems. That's where you want to go.
Mm.
That kind of thing.
Right.
And most people aren't even in touch with their beliefs. They don't even know what they believe. And we just likely go down the room. You know, I have to say this. Terrorism is how the New World Order wants to rule. This is how they did it. And when they tried the World Trade Center and just didn't do very much, and then they tried the USS Cole, you know, and then Texas, they didn't have a body count. It's a terrible way to look at things, but guess what? And everybody is afraid. And, you know, that's Castaneda again. The first enemy of man is fear. And when you overcome fear, you confront the second enemy, which is power. And you achieve personal power. And that becomes an enemy. Then you start to see things more clearly.
Mm.
That's your third enemy. And what's the fourth enemy? You remember that?
No, but I'm
old
listening very closely.
You can't do anything about it. Now you got it.
Right.
That's what it was, man. It's, you got, you know, fear, power, clarity, and old age. That's just a model. Actually, it was my father that told me there's three ways of being in this world. There's the vulgar, the adept, and the exempt. The vulgar get audited. The adept gets money back from the government. You know, it's called a kickback this year. And the exempt has a 501c3. They don't pay taxes. There you go. It's a way of being. And to do that, you have to, you know, appropriately shape your belief systems, the places in the brain that you're working with. It ain't going to work from there because you were birthed wrong. Mm. And that's the first crime. That's why they did spiritual midwifery, and they set this thing up in Tennessee?
Where they had the farm down there.
Yeah, there you go. And that was all about how you're birthed.
Mm-hmm.
So that the child at least has a chance out of the gate.
Right. Not behind the eight ball to begin with. Yeah.
There you go. You're getting it. And so the whole thing is about your relationship to yourself. If you got that, you can walk away from it.
Hmm.
And that's why, even though I didn't have any money, I got to play at the DuPont Country Club because I was a pro.
Right.
Yeah. And so I didn't have to have the money. You know, I had access. And that's a way of being. By the way, I also wanted to say hi to a man I met through your who's your webmaster, Larry Nordgren.
Sure, Larry. Hi, Larry.
Larry designed my cover. What did you think of that cover for the
new book? Oh, the new book's incredible.
Yeah. We're gonna take a run at New York, and I'll tell you. Right. Nick's got big plans. He's crazy, man. He's cha-ching, cha-ching.
Huh.
You know, he's a really fine man, and he and his wife, I call Sheila Spatula, Buffalo Spatula Woman. The Indians were giggling at her, and she got angry jokingly and waved her spatula at them. You go ahead and stop that now. I called her Buffalo Spatula Woman, and everybody giggled. The Indians up there, you know, Nick's very popular in Alaska because it was his dad.
Yeah.
Everybody in that state gets a $1,200 check at the end of each year from the oil Alaska pipeline. Thank you, Mr. Begich. So, you know, and his brother, his younger brother, won a landslide victory in Anchorage. So someone's got to run for governor. What do you think?
I think it's him.
Well, stay tuned. 11. Will Batman save Robin? Will.
Hey, Rick, a listener asked, Mike, ask Rick if Castaneda died when he jumped off the cliff, or did he turn into a raven?
No. The ravens and crows are death. Page two. Metaphors for coastal Indians, anyway. Castaneda, when he was at Berkeley, was paranoid. Big time. And would go into recluse where they couldn't get him out of the room. Paranoid and all that. And that's why Simon and Schuster came to it for Tales of Power. He's written since then, but at that time, which was that, 74? It was 73? I think it was 74.
Yes, yeah,
74. Tales of Power. Yeah, Simon and Schuster, they paid me. You know, and they paid two other of my friends. He had emotional problems, and I think he became a recluse. I don't know much about him. Terrence McKenna was like that, too. I was, Rolling Stone wanted me to interview Terrence, and his brother is cool. But Terrence was a paranoid also, and he knew I was going to maybe bust him on some stuff, because I had some questions for him, and Rolling Stone wanted me to do it. And I showed up at his home, with an old girlfriend of his to get in his door, and he wouldn't come to the door. He's afraid to come to the door because of me. I was a Godzilla back then, and I have some questions. His girlfriend, that one that was in the Amazon with him, I met her at Dura, where they had a big deal down in San Francisco, where Sharon Singh, I'm a Satsangi, came in, and I met her there, and that's when I was in 19. 85. I think it was in 85. I was going to interview Terrence on his zero-point energy and, you know, some of his concepts. And I had questions. You know, I had some serious questions. And I met this friend who was his girlfriend through the Amazon. And I wanted to, he still didn't come out. I was a terror back then because I would go in and bust people. And that was the thing that bothered me so much about Andrea Puharich. Puharich, Geller was Puharich's protege. I mean, this was.
But Geller was legit to a certain extent, thought, right?
Yeah, he was. But he was, yes, he was. He could do paranormal. But what's real and what's fake? Hmm. You had to throw the baby out with the bathwater if he's cheating.
Hmm.
And that's that. And the problem was it destroyed Puharich. And he went into slump for 10 years. He's back now, and he's doing some great writing again. But
is he still around?
Yes.
Didn't he do work on the mushrooms early on too?
Yes.
Amanita,
Amanita work on mushrooms. What do you think? The Pope and his cradle.
did Puharich do work on Amanita or the psilocybin variety?
Psilocybin mostly, and really. You're a crazy man because what you're doing with psilocybin mushrooms, I find it very fascinating.
Oh.
Hybridizing for monoatomic silver, that's kind of like, what do you call that, bioprospecting?
Yeah. Well,
what you're doing, bioprospecting.
Let me tell you, I have some news for you, but I'll tell you off the air. Anyway.
All right, but I find your work as fascinating as you think mine is. You're a crazy man. Amazing. It's great information. I wrote the first book on psychedelic mushrooms. It was Magical Mushroom Handbook.
A very important book, by the way.
Well, it was my first book, but...
Well, but it's important from a legal standpoint, too.
Well, that was different. It wasn't the psilocybin mushroom.
No, it was the herb book, the Magical and Ritual Use of Herbs.
Herbs, yes. Mm-hmm. That was where they had a chapter in there, and that kept all of those herbs out of the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. Yes, I was a radical back then.
That's amazing, Richard.
You was.
I mean, I bow to you for that, man.
Oh, well.
Else you ever did or you ever do, I love you for that, man.
Yeah, you want to see some good ones. They're all in there. Telepathy and all of them.
I've seen them. I've got the book, trust me.
Which version? Do you have
I've
the
got
original?
Two of them, actually. I always keep two in case I need to give one to someone who wants to grow.
Yes, but which version do you have? That's got 197,000 copies as of last year.
Oh, I don't know. I have one of the early ones, and then I have one of the ones that's
not so
early.
Is it a white one with a tree of life? And it says alchemical physicist. Ha, ha, ha. That's the original one before Inner Traditions changed it.
That's the one that I got to pay a lot of money to get.
Yeah, but it's got a great cover, you know. That's and on the back cover, it's the book was on about drugs, sex, and magic. Drugs. Reality is for those people who can't handle drugs. I said magic, anything not specifically forbidden is mandatory. And under sex, I said the thought that occurs at the moment of climax happens.
That's the old day.
And that book is the reason it's so important, because Inner Traditions didn't want to put it in there, but it had, the original had publication in Class B, and I'm the only person in history with OTO to publish other than Aleister Crowley. That was Caliph. Grady McMurtry gave me publication in Class B. That became their ritual models. Since Crowley, nobody else has ever had publication in Class B. Had the OTO logo in there, whole nine yards, not in history. And Inner Traditions left it out. That's one of the things they left out. They left out the back cover on Drex, Sex, and Magic, too.
Huh, amazing.
Well, you know, it's just an alchemical physicist. They called me a biochemist, and in fact, I'm not a biochemist. I'm a physicist, a biophysicist, which, by the way, had quantum biochemistry as a physics course under Albert Sims Gordon, so it's higher than biochemistry. And I'm, an herbalist? Well, you know.
Well, yeah, and I want to talk to you again in the spring about things that grow. I mean, my intuition is that whatever is coming in the future, and you paint sort of a bleak picture, even though I'm trying to force you not to.
Well, not out in the woods, and if I'm growing...
No, like where we are. It's
gallium arsenide. Well, you know, Eolian, somewhere around the Missouri, down there is pretty nice.
Right.
And, you know, it's nice country. And it's rural. It's not like Congo. You know, Illinois and Missouri are like different countries. Mm. You know, like they're different countries.
But people being able to learn to sustain on their own land and grow things that grow where they live and that sort of thing could be, you know, I mean, obviously really helpful for people.
Well, you know, there's a friend of Jan's in Colorado Springs that has introduced me to Janice Sperling. There's a little alpha. You know, she's trying to market me to Home Depot years for their home and garden center to start a small farm rural community advocate movement again. Chicago and Scottsdale are using my idea now. Right in the center of town, they have knocked down 2 acres of prime land and are giving row crops to the neighborhood.
Wow.
And that's where everybody meets to do their ego swapping.
Yeah.
And it works because the small farm values of trade, not money, of ego, who grew the best tomatoes, of putting your hands in the soil.
Yeah,
that's why I did it. At 35 years, I write for Acres. I have to tell you, there's something important going on here.
And even from a practical standpoint, it's like, I mean, how expensive does oil have to get before it becomes unreasonable to ship?
That yellow urine thing, you know, you pee in your gas can. Huh. Corn, we have in the state of Oregon, we have a law where you are not allowed to grow corn on the same piece of ground 2 years in a row, period.
Hmm. Why?
That depletes the soils and sets up Monsanto and all the big boys, the New World Order.
Hmm.
Too. We did studies back in the studies in the early 70s for solar alcohol, and the bottom line started with Jerusalem artichokes and jojoba, and we ended up with comfrey. And right now I'm negotiating with Nigeria and Brazil for cattle feeds, because when you grow comfrey as a cattle food additive with alfalfa, it becomes a whole food for the cow. And it's so high in biomass yields, about 4 times more than corn is per acre, and it goes down 18 feet, which means you're not depleting your A horizon or B horizon. It's down into bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
It gets, the arguments go on and on. The corn thing for solar alcohol is a ruse, and really, you should be growing. Now, gallium and arsenic are in a lot of water around, in the ground, around anywhere you have serpentine soils, like here. And you can mine it easily, and if you grow the two as gallium arsenide, that's your solar panels. You can sit there with no moving parts, no chop wood or carry water here, buddy.
Awesome.
Well, I'm too old for that. You know what I mean? Yeah,
all right.
Really.
Rick, one more break, okay?
Sure.
All right. Awesome, everybody. It's Mike Hagen. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. My guest is Richard Allen Miller on the web, www.richardallenmiller.com. And there have been a couple other programs with Richard in the past 6-7 months, and I advise you or encourage you to go to the archives and check those out as well, okay? All right, it's Mike, and this is another song from Finn O'Loughlin. It's called Zone, and we'll be back with Richard Allen Miller in just a few minutes, all right? It's Mike Hagen. You're listening to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Don't hide, don't hide.
Finn O'Loughlin. That's called Zone. On the web, finnolachlan.com. You can link over there directly from my site at mikehagan.com, and you'll be able to find information about Finn in the music archives after the program tonight, okay? And this entire program, including the interview here with Richard Allen Miller, will be up in the archives sometime in the next 24 hours or so, and we will get right back to him, Mr. Richard Allen Miller, and say thank you for sticking around, Richard.
Yeah, my pleasure. That music sounded like Led Zeppelin.
That's this guy's amazing, man.
I know. I mean, that was pretty good music.
I love it. All right. Yeah. Hey, a question comes in email. It says, Mike, please ask Richard about his opinion about the level of technology that is available off the shelf and recognizable to regular people versus the real state of the art in any particular area.
40 years. It 40 years. We takes about 40 years.
40 years.
Yeah, from the time we're making these little chips, and I saw at the Experimental Research at DuPont in 1967. This is what led me to do studies on Gaber, who did holographic concepts original. I saw a three-dimensional color TV operational. I saw it. Now,
a three-dimensional color TV.
1967.
Holy cow.
Now, where is it?
What does that tell us?
Well, them and us. There's, it usually, when the grad students, the edgy people like myself are doing the studies, it takes about 40 years before you got your Walkman. And the problem is, it's been set up for marketing. You know, solid state physics means you have to rotate your computers. That's like Mopar. You know, like new and improved. They break down. And before me, Navy had a genius girl, this woman that I forget her name now, but what she did for Navy was that Navy's where all the technology goes. That's not Army. You know, not NSA, man. It's on Navy. And DuPont. And she invented COBOL as a backdoor in case the aliens were leaving us flintlocks.
I.e. the language, the computer language, COBOL.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was a backdoor. It was an added element. They could turn things off. That was the whole trip about Y2K.
Huh.
And the aliens left us some flintlocks, and they have Mac-10s in their back. Yeah, like we think we got something, but nada. It's all in perception, and
then the alien thing as well. In other words,
you think I don't even think that this movie is about mankind anyway on Earth. I think the gods are out here on the rim doing biological experiments, and we're a byproduct. And there are four mammals that are more evolved technically, have bigger brains, and have technology. We're going to talk about the dolphin in 1 second here. Hmm. That are more evolved than man technically. I was the whiz kid that Carl Sagan used to go into John Lilly's labs. I was there 10 days. I recognized the language of the dolphin was a form of Clifford algebra. That was like what? 10 times more efficient than Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. And all these different levels, right?
Well, they could they can transmit more information and 10 times more efficiently than Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And the redundancy in English, if you catch my drift, is awful. Abram Moles, aesthetic perception and information theory, wrote about that. Now, the dolphin right now have an art form that's on the internet. You can watch these little film clips. They blow these little bubbles, and they pop into bright light. It has these forms in it, and then at the end, just before they hit the surface, they pop into bright light. It turns out that light is a form of sonoluminescence, another form of cold fusion, which MIT has only just now been able to duplicate. And guess what? That's their art form.
Huh.
And they're lower on the food chain than Orca.
Huh.
Gets weirder and weirder.
Yeah.
Well, who do you think Gaia is? Yeah, Michael Rossi in the store. That's one of the reasons why, even though your vegetable isn't as good as the store or cheaper, costs a lot of money, a lot of work. Something else happens that is, you know, when you put your hands in the soil, you have a different kind of relationship. You have a sovereignty.
That's the word, it's relationship.
Yeah, and you have sovereignty. You feel, gosh, if everything went to hell, at least I can grow my tomatoes.
Right. You know? And the tomato sort of digs you for growing it.
Well, the lycopene, who knows? Yes, that's Baxter. That's another guy I bested.
Well, I know you didn't dig him, but I sort of always... Yeah, I mean,
I know.
Even though I can't prove it, I love to grow things, and I have a sense that it's a two-way street, that the plants appreciate the fact that you take care of them, just like
you
appreciate...
Now, you think that in your mind.
Well, maybe not, but...
Ah, you made it happen.
But that's what the whole thing is. That you've been telling me all night that's all that matters, is what I think.
Yes, that is correct. You know... one of the things I did in agriculture was that I fed layer hens in Lancaster, in the Amish, which is a business plan. I sold them purslane, and they fed these layer hens with purslane, and they played a Mozart. And what happened next was they had a low cholesterol egg that the Amish marketed all up and down the eastern seaboard. Huh. Less stress on the hen, and they put out a better egg.
Wow.
Yeah, play the music. There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's... not so much what you do, how you do it.
Mm.
That's where the energy of spirituality happens. Not what you do, how you do it. That's where resonance happens. And it goes from here to there. It goes from inside to outside. It goes from above to below. It goes in a cascade. That's what a hologram is. A hologram is, unlike quantum mechanics, which basically has decoherence and entanglement. You know, what holograms to discuss are information and resolution of information. And because of the way our brains are organized and the way we chunk information, we categorize it into one of basically eight different means.
Right, yeah.
Physical, emotional, intellectual, archetypal, it goes on. And, you know, Leary called them neurologic circuits. You know, there's one for sex, there's one for survival, you know, there's several, and they're all important. And they all work, but it turns out, ultimately, they're all the same. It's just a different way of looking at it, because the physical...
What do you think the internet is doing to this whole equation?
Another alien taking over.
You wrote this great piece. I don't know.
Alien presence.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. It was called Alien Presence.
Huh?
On the internet. Incredible, actually.
Yeah, but now see, yeah, that's called what is that? SETI. Now SETI had babies. There's a Wayback Machine, so you can get a chunk through history. You know what your website looked like 10 years ago?
Yeah.
That's a different alien. And there's another one called Frugal, or the way you group your studies, what they call object-oriented, where you categorize things. And when you look for books, do you mean books like booking a jockey or books like you read?
Right.
Yeah, well, and that's a whole another way of organizing. There's a new web search engine called ixquick.com.
Huh.
Try that one. That's even better than Google.
Do you think that the AI is actually sort of evolving in the primordial soup of the web?
You mean evolving, or was it here first and it created us? Like
maybe. Either or.
Yeah, well, see.
I guess maybe a better question is, do you think it's going to make itself known?
You mean, has it? Yeah, I think that 2012 is going to be a big eye-opener for everybody. What do you think? You know, when they first contact and the Vulcans walk out of the ship with pointed ears. There we go. Yeah, really. Oh, no. Something's going to happen. Yeah, like they're going to come in and harvest the wheat because they eat us. What was that movie? That was called, it was from England, it was called Life Force. Did you remember seeing that sci-fi
movie? I don't think so, no.
Ooh, what a scary one. There's a bunch of vampires in the back end of Halley's Comet. They're in stasis. Yeah, and they bring them to Earth, and Halley's Comet moves on, and a whole bunch of people that become infected go with the comet. It's called Life Force.
Right.
Real scary, very well done science fiction out of England. Like to twist your mind. You know, in Seattle, I was known back then, besides the wizard, I was all called King of the Mind Warp. Guaranteed, go talk to Richard Miller, he'll twist you. Yeah, really.
I understand why.
Hey, I had fun. It's fun to push people outside of themselves and make them think. Because when I do that, then they make me think. And then, I'm no longer a teacher, I'm a colleague. Mm. That's what I see, colleagues.
What did you make about energy? And I guess the question is, do we really need answers, or do we have everything we need, but we just need to change the way the political issues and the way we handle things? I mean, do we have energy technologies that most people are just unaware of?
Well,
is the oil paradigm really obsolete, but we just think it's not?
How did talking heads do it? Same as it ever was. Yeah. David Byrne is a great David Bowie, you know, there he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, same as it ever was, energy is, a way of grouping what you see is happening. You know, that was Isaac Newton. His real contribution was not about gravity. It was he developed the calculus and, rate of change.
And he was an alchemist of sorts, too.
What's that?
He was an alchemist of sorts.
We all are alchemists. You're an alchemist. Yeah. I'm an alchemist. And
that's
we are
for
the
sure.
Walrus. You know? Yeah, well, there it is. And remember Crash Collusion, that zine?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the people... that's
really cool, actually.
They did a big interview with me called The Modern Alchemist. That's what I'm... called because of my title.
And a book that you have, which is...
Yeah, I got a bunch of books. But, you know, they're going to do me at the first week of January. You remember David Gorightly, or what was his name, Gorightly?
Not sure.
Yeah, he's Crash Collusion, and boing, boing, there it is. Huh. Yeah, they're still around. They're not doing that zine anymore, but they're still doing radio shows.
Awesome.
And it'll be on my website under events. I just wanted to say... that it's, of all the different radio that I do, and I'm just starting to get around a little bit now, I have found, overall, your audience has, I get more response than Nick Begich, Adele, blah, 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 blah. Huh. I mean, your audience is, in some ways, even Rob Simone, does Europe, England, your audience is a cut above... They are.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I
mean,
I
for them,
it.
I say thank you, but I see it too. I mean,
yeah,
the email I get is very...
I've met some of the coolest people that caught your show. And Nick Begich runs, his own gods, but, and...
What we need to do is get you and Nick on the air at the same time.
That'd be a crazy man. Nick's got... some radio roles. He's teaching me how to do it. I didn't do very good today.
Oh, that's all right. We always do the same, you and me. But
yeah. But Nick's radio rule number one subject.
Yeah,
for radio.
We failed miserably tonight, but that's all right.
Yeah, but it's okay. We got people a little bonfire lit here.
That's what I like to do. It's just like,
Yeah, and his second radio rule is 50% rule.
Ha, LD50.
There's three people in that 30% rule. Nick's got all these rules. It's really cool. He's fun. I like Nick. You know how he selected me to become a friend?
How?
His rule is how long has he known his friends?
Huh.
And all my friends are 40 and 50 years. I've got, more than one hand. I'm a very fortunate person, but that's kind of value that Nick and Sheila, as Alaskans, to be distinguished from California, Californication, whatever. Yeah, it's different in value systems. And again, values are what set up your beliefs. Once you have your belief system, then you have your values. And so if you want to change your values, you must start with your core, which is belief systems. Good luck discovering those. It's a process. I'm going to write about it. And it's a tool. Hey, using brain drivers, some high-tech physics. Where are we? Get your brain massaged in a certain way, then we do this exercise. And, you know, I had epiphanies. I actually changed habits I'd been doing till I was for 60 years. That's impossible. And because I was using brain drivers, once I saw it, I got it, just stopped. I used to fabricate. I had no idea why. I used to fabricate my childhood. When I was 4 years old, my dad was a five-star general in the Navy, you know, that kind of thing. And I grew up in China, and I did this, and I did that. And I have no idea why I did that, because I had a great childhood. I was very fortunate that way. And it's just, maybe I didn't think I was super enough, special enough to get people's attention. So I tried to focus by making myself something I wasn't. Mm. But now, I'm old and gnarly and curmudgeon. I don't need to do that, because just as I am, pretty much says it all. And, well, I mean, there it is. You read it and weep. And so I don't exaggerate anymore. What I try to do is, I have agendas. I have intent. Those are very important, to know your intentionality. What's your purpose for what you're doing? And I do have pretty clear on that. That's extremely important. Part of yourself. Go ahead, and you got a few minutes here, so go ahead. And you got more questions, and you want to wrap it up? What do you want to do here?
Well, I guess I just want to ask one last thing before we go. Is that with all of the stuff we're talking about, we've covered a lot of ground tonight, actually. But in a way, it's all related to the idea that mind and consciousness define our reality, essentially.
Well, there, you know, it was Descartes that separated the mind from the body. And what I'm going to try to do is reunite it. Yeah, because really, you can't do the one without the other. And all of physics had in the past, that all stops now.
So as individuals, in order to try to bring about... See, we're all experiencing our individual lives, but at the same time, we're experiencing a greater life in that of the world, you know, the observation of what's happening in the greater world.
And our relationship to it. Yeah,
right.
That's the important. Individuation is what James Hillman would call that. And by the way, James Hillman's newest book is a masterpiece, even for people like me. Mm. I mean, I don't get moved very often anymore. And his latest book is called The Soul's Code in Search of Character and Calling.
Huh.
And you need to pin it down. You've got your calling, and you've got your character. You've got your style. I do, too. That is where it's at. You've got to start there for getting in touch with your soul. You know, there's in the Modern Alchemist...
Do you believe the soul is a real entity?
Yeah, stag and the unicorn in the forest. Soul and spirit within matter. It is, the soul is immortal, whereas the spirit is the unicorn. The stag and the unicorn. The stag is your soul, and that is an immortal element of you that goes on after you. Like, y'all remember this day. But this is soul and spirit. They're a separation. That was alchemical. Soul and spirit within matter. The mortal and immortal parts. Self. And self, by the way, is capitalist. That's your higher self. That's the guy, the woman that is directing your show right now, really.
All right, one last thing.
Yeah. fun, huh?
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under will.
Under will. Yeah, that's Aleister Crowley. That is used as a protocol for addressing a colleague. If I were going to address you as a colleague, I would call you Frater, and then I would write, do what thou wilt, should be the whole of the law. I would tell you what I want to know or ask or blah, 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 and I would end it by love is the law, love under will. Mm. Now they abbreviate it now with 99 space, 99/99, which is bullshit.
right.
I'm old school, and Crowley was very clear.
Well, the words are important, I think.
What's that?
The words are important.
Yeah. Love is not, you know, English has only one word for love, where the Greek had four words. There was eros, philo, agape. Telema.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And telema was the love of will.
Yeah.
And your will is your bottom line, your purpose here. That's what Hillman is talking about. Search of character, calling. And you, so you're open and loving, do what thou wilt. So you can do anything you want to. Love is the law, love under will. If I can help you, I will, but if it deters me from my path is my path.
Right. Amazing.
Aleister Crowley. Magic is a higher form of physics. It is an art form. It is the art of changing consciousness at will.
And bending fate, essentially.
I'm sorry?
And bending fate, essentially.
Well, fate. Fate.
Whatever that means, right.
How's that that robot in Hitchhiker's Guide? Oh, I just know. Yeah, that's a great one, man. That image is how I am doing my physics with you right now. You've got the whole picture just with that image when he's sitting there. You know, that was Llewellyn, and before he did his father started Fate magazine, before Llewellyn started doing his astrological calendar.
Richard yeah. Allen Miller, I tell you what, my brother, it's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure with you too, Mike. Thank you for inviting me again.
You're right, and I'll be in touch off the air as always, okay?
Cool.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Just feel free to keep in touch, and I'll, you know, like I do, I'll keep you in the loop on some things.
Oh, I love that you do, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, okay. Well, it just keeps you on, you know, keeps you at the center of what's going on. And I really appreciate it, Larry. Larry Marger, he's a treasure.
Yeah,
he's probably one of the most generous, special human beings I've ever met. I haven't met him, Darshan, but he's just a really, he's and his wife died this last
week. Yeah. Yeah,
she was a wonderful. She got up to go to the bathroom, and instead of coming back to bed, she went into the other room, and he found her in the morning. And why did she do that? And I said, because she did not want you to wake up with her laying next to you in bed dead. You know, it made it different for him in the way he could process it. Now he's out beating with Kelly Howell and some others. Good luck, Larry.
Yeah.
Molly, he's moving, you know. So.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right. He's a great guy, and I'm glad you guys are working together. So.
Yeah.
All right, Richard, take care of yourself. I'll talk to you soon, right?
You betcha. Nice talking to you, sir.
All right. Everybody, Richard Allen Miller on the web, richardallenmiller.com. It's Mike Hagan. You've been listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Next week, we will, not sure what we'll do. I may have Brick Medicine Eagle if I can pull it off. If not, we'll do the thing just you and me. And then Stephen Herod Buhner on the 24th, okay? All right, so one more time, thank you to Richard Allen Miller and everybody for listening to the program tonight. Stick around for nothing, actually. I'm going to play a few songs and then turn the station off or shut the transmitter down or whatever you want to call it, because my relief is not here. So anyway, one more time, thanks Richard and everybody for listening. It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. This is one last one from Finn O'Loughlin. Great music tonight from Ireland/England/the USA. This one's called Nature's Solution. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you next week. It's Mike on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Cancerous mankind, erected. yourself to evolve and redesign, to expose our stupidity in the face of death, and sigh with relief as we breathe our last breath. Out of other suffering, we interfere as we spare our voice into the atmosphere. And when the sounds of change are ringing so clear, so obsessed with ease we cannot hear. Close and cynical to the signs provided, I'm surprised when you have not already subsided. Through the media we tend to be misguided as we sleep this gift of thank you.